Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 45, The Renaissance, Part 10. Brunelleschi soon came to realize that it's one thing to smash an egg at its bottom to make it stand upright. It's another to have to put the egg back together again, because that's very much what the construction of this dome was going to be. There were no rules to follow, hardly any precedents except in ancient Rome, and a good deal of what had gone into those structures was lost. I might add that an important component, as you remember, we talked about this in the Grade 6 conference as well, a very important component in all Roman construction was cement, concrete. The Romans had really developed this to the point where they could work with very unskilled labor and build remarkable, strong structures. That formula was lost. That was not to be found again and used again and redeveloped for some time. So he was going to have to work with bricks. And the concern was the number of bricks, their weight, and above all, the fact that there could not be scaffolding, and above that, or we might say below it, the fact that the original design of the cathedral was octagonal. So one had an octagon on which to work, not a building in the round, which would help at least get things underway. So Brunelleschi pondered this, and he had a plan developed in which there would really be two domes, an outer one, which would conform to the octagonal quality of the structure itself, of the foundation of the dome, and an inner dome, which would be connected to the outer dome, protected from the elements, so that in a way it could be lighter, and it would give an interior impression of roundness, while the outer dome would be a beautiful octagonal structure, giving a sense of something approaching a circle, but by no means meeting that limit. So he was going to build two domes. Now, if I use the word double dome to some of you, immediately, of course, you think of the Gertianum, where there were two separate domes that met, and that in itself was quite, from a mathematical architectural point of view, the first Gertianum was quite a miraculous construction in and of itself. And here, too, we have something quite remarkable. Isn't this interesting, though? Here again, I don't want to belabor this term, but it's so good for us to keep referring to it, that in the age of the consciousness soul, the human being has a very strong sense of the difference between the outer world and the inner world. They do not just flow together. They can be compartmentalized. They can be separated. One can appear one way to one's fellow man, and a completely different way to oneself. So this sense of the I and the thou, the ego and the other, that Brunelleschi would undoubtedly be experiencing as a prototype of consciousness, soul, human being, he puts into the architecture of the dome itself. Had he not done this, it's unlikely anything like that dome would be built. So there's a hollow space now. He's created a space which really will not be experienced by anyone but the people building the building and those building the dome and those maintaining it. Every day in the 16 years or so in which he worked on this, and it was not the only project he worked on either, because at times the wool guild ran out of money, and to earn his daily bread, Brunelleschi had to do other things. He also embarked on a disastrous project in which he designed a boat, which was probably the largest boat ever built at that time, that would bring some construction materials downriver, because it was very difficult to transport all of the materials he needed. And he even got a patent for the design of the ships. He was a ship designer. Unfortunately, it sank, and with it sank all of the money that Brunelleschi had invested in it. But he kept going anyway, not one to let a little matter like that deter him. So in the end, he was to use more than 4 million bricks. You know, we're talking about something on the level of the Empire State Building or one of the pyramids. An incredible amount of material, but not just kind of on the ground, built on top, you know, one brick laid on the other. Bricks that were never exactly laid on top of one another, because they were always curving. They were always slanting slightly, which meant that every one of these 4 million bricks had to practically be custom made. And Brunelleschi had to go to the brickyards and teach the manufacturers of the bricks how to develop bricks that were slightly beveled, something not done before, at least certainly not on this level. In the end, it would weigh 37,000 tons. There again, we're talking about, you know, monumental materiality, monumental weight. Now, even in the cathedrals, where scaffolding was allowed and where there were ingenious ways of getting people up to the soaring heights, but even there, there were accidents. You know, in an average cathedral, 5 or 10 people would die in a good year, and when they were working on one of the steeples or in some very daring architectural excess or so, it might be 20 or 30 people would die in a given year. Brunelleschi's concern was for his workers, a very new concept and idea. He wanted those workers to be safe. He wanted them to be productive. He needed them to be awake, because they were always doing something very different from what they had ever done before in all their years of construction. So halfway up the dome, he built a little restaurant for the workers, the first real kind of workers' cafeteria ever seen. And he managed, using his very ingenious hoists and pulleys and all of these inventions that he created, some of which he patented, some of which not. He was very secretive about all of these devices, because he didn't want Ghiberti to get wind of them. Then he could take over and build it himself, or anyone else. So he kept all of this stuff very, very close to him. He even invented a lift with a reverse gear, so that one did not always have to unwind and rewind everything, but that one could quickly reverse the movement. Brilliant, and just, again, completely out of himself, these remarkable inspirations. Steiner would say about such an individual, to the best of my knowledge, he did not speak ever about Brunelleschi, so we have to figure this out for ourselves. But what Steiner would say about such an individual is, in the life between death and rebirth, which we've been talking about, this individual spent time in the Jupiter sphere, and he spent that time awake in that sphere. This is the sphere that Steiner speaks of as the sphere of archetypes, that everything that ever has been invented, that ever will be invented or created artistically, is there already. It's prefigured. And most people are not inventive, because by virtue of the way they spent the previous life, they cannot remain awake in the highly etiolated, refined atmosphere of Jupiter. So they're asleep, but there are those who are awake, and they come down with all kinds of inspirations and ideas, and Brunelleschi is clearly an individuality like this. So he built this cafe. He made sure that the workers stayed in the dome at lunchtime. Otherwise, they all would have had to have been transported down to the floor of the cathedral and go out to, you know, the street vendors and the taverns and have a nice long break for themselves. He didn't want that to happen. So he controlled the circumstance, fed them well, and also in the style of Google or Apple or, you know, one of these wonderful progressive companies today. And he let them drink alcoholic beverages, but it was watered-down wine, the same sort of thing that pregnant women were prescribed to drink in those days. So they got a little bit stimulated, but not drunk. And these circumstances of not having people going all the way up and all the way down and, you know, eating terrible food and drinking a lot on the job, it made it extremely safe. And the workers were basically a contented lot, even though the work and the demands were extremely challenging. And so the dome got built. No thanks to Guy Berti, who just was tearing away politically at Brunelleschi all the time, and sometimes it looked like construction would come to an end or Brunelleschi would be pulled off the job. He had his failures, he made his mistakes, but nonetheless, this incredible architectural masterpiece of beauty and of technological achievement, a dome, a structure that really changed the world in the way that in the past the pyramids or the Parthenon or other great or the cathedrals really showed a new step in human consciousness and a new step in human achievement. In the midst of all of these labors and the tremendous strains and stresses of bringing the dome to completion, and it was finally consecrated in 1536, Brunelleschi nonetheless found the time to do something which was a little bit of a practical joke, but which, like so much of what he did, like almost everything that he did, had real ramifications for the rest of the Renaissance. He set up using a small card on which he had done a beautiful drawing of an unfinished baptistery and a mirror and a pinhole. He was able to create the illusion that this baptistery was fully finished and renovated when actually it wasn't at all, because he understood how to use the laws of perspective in a small scale to make it appear as though people were actually looking into this great hall when all they were looking at was a few inches in front of them. So here he was using A, the laws of perspective, and B, the laws of reflection. Very interested in this. Later on, Leonardo was to say that the mirror is the spirit of the artist, or the mirror is the guardian of the artist. Very interesting. So here we have perspective, reflection brought together, and word spread about what Brunelleschi had done, and this became a fascination to artists and probably led to the development of the so-called camera obscura, of which Roberto Trusley speaks in his light and color lecture video that we'll see. So here again, he managed to find the time to do this. And the construction was finished, and Brunelleschi was honored that when he died in 1446, he was buried below the floor of the cathedral, we might say looking up eternally, as they would say in those days, at his dome. Though we know from Steiner, actually he was going on to bigger and better things. All right, so that's the story of Brunelleschi, and I have, as usual, just given you less than a thumbnail of his incredible achievements. If you've got the time and can do justice to his life and work, by all means do. Here is another area in which the boys will be very grateful to you, for them to recognize that at the very foundation of the Renaissance, it's not just art, it's also engineering. It's art and it's technology that are really being married and are going to be pulled apart as well by the end of the Renaissance. But here we see individuals who are artists and what we would call techies at the same time. Not a bad thing for the boys to experience.